Welcome, members and guests, to the February 21st program at the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our TV audiences on Community Television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club President. Today's sponsors are Evans, Elder & Brown Commercial Real Estate, Gatos, Churnside & Balthrop, a law firm for our community, and PacInfo Internet Solutions. A special thank you, as always, to KLCC for airing their programs on Monday night, and KPFF Consulting Engineers for our office space. Welcome to our new members, Richard Cundiff and Michael Jacobson. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, yet there are costs involved. Your contribution is completely tax deductible and will help keep our organization healthy. You may also make a matching contribution to the Oregon Cultural Trust and receive both your matching donation and your membership fee back as a tax credit on next year's state taxes. Now I'd like to introduce Nathan Lilligard, the program manager of the Lundquist Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Oregon, formerly also a founder of Florogenics, to introduce our program today.
Thank you, Marty, and thank you for the opportunity to be here and tell you a little bit about what's going on at the university. It's that big thing down the street with lots of students. Lots of green and trees, well, less trees now than before a week ago. But there is this thing in Eugene called the University of Oregon, and it's a big entity, and everyone looks at the University of Oregon to drive some sort of economic development. And I think one way to measure the economic development of the University of Oregon is to look at companies started by students. Right? Every year we get a brand new crop of 5,000 to 6,000 new people that move to Eugene to pursue their studies and, you know, take the next step in life. And for many of them, what they want to do is start a company. So what do they do if that's their goal? Well, my hope is that they come visit me at the Lundquist Center for Entrepreneurship, which is a center within the College of Business where I help students work through business ideas. So a student, much like Sean here, or Karen and Shannon, who are our speakers and panelists today, they will come to me and say, I've got an idea, what do I do now? And having been an entrepreneur myself, having gone through the process of starting a company, going out and getting investor capital for a company, building a team, managing profit and loss, all that fun stuff that all you business owners know all too well. I've got some experience in that, and I help steer them in the right direction. And these panelists here today are a couple of the folks who have stayed local with the companies that they've started, and also folks who I would say are true, not pioneers, but just really cutting-edge entrepreneurs in the things that they're trying to do. I will talk just a quick second about what I've done. I am a double duck. I'd graduated in 1998 with a degree in planning, public policy, and management. Then I took that degree and worked at a software company across the mountains over in Bend for about 5 years. After 5 years of fun and work, and I decided I needed to come back and get an MBA. So I came back across the mountains, moved to Eugene in 2004, and to pursue my MBA. After that MBA program, I decided to stick around and start a company with one of my, with a professor that I met through one of my programs who had a genetic research technology, and we thought this technology would have some application to plant breeders and other scientists around the world. So we got together, put in some money, got a loan from the City of Eugene Business Development Fund, and started a company, and away we went. And 6 years later, I had the opportunity, after doing that successfully and going through that whole process, to come back and teach other people to do what I had done. So it's been an honor. It's been a pleasure. It's always fun. We get all sorts of wacky ideas that come through my door. Lots of apps. No offense, Sean, but every student at the university seems to have an idea for some crazy picture-sharing app because that's what they do now. And every once in a while, I get a few people who just say, well, I want to start a ketchup company. And that's interesting and not something you see every day. So let me just say that there's a lot of really vibrant stuff happening with the students at the University of Oregon. Lots of really smart, driven students come here, and they're looking for ways to push their life into the next stage. And for many of them, that's starting a company. And I want you to take away from this program that it's a very vibrant an active community here in the city of Eugene. You might not always hear about it. We might not always see it because some of these companies stay real small, but it's definitely an important piece of what the University of Oregon does for the community. So perhaps right now I could introduce the panelists and then we could have some discussion about what they're doing right now. So I'll start on the end there with Mr. Sean Thorne. Sean is a student, poli-sci major, is that right? Econ?
Econ.
Econ major at the University of Oregon. Currently not a student, but working full-time on his business, HallSpot, which he'll tell you about. But Sean came to me last year, about this time, and had a fantastic pitch deck. He had his ideas all together. He had everything polished and ready to present. And I thought, this kid's got some opportunity to really build something here. So I kind of took him under my wing, and we've been coaching, and I've been coaching and mentoring him since. So it's been a fun ride, that's for sure. And he's building a social media company. I'll let him tell you more about that in a second. Karen Bonner, a native Eugenian, right? Yep. Graduated South Eugene High School, went away for college, and then ended up back here in Eugene to get her MBA, and has been here, and she's a co-founder of Red Duck Ketchup. And Shannon Oliver, her co-founder next to her, she is a student of sustainability. Is that a good way to put it? Moved to Eugene a few years ago and then ended up at the University of Oregon MBA program, and it has been instrumental in helping get their company off the ground. So I'll let them talk a little bit about what they've done and what their companies are, and then I can ask them some questions and any questions you might have. But thank you again for the opportunity. So Sean, tell us a little bit about HallSpot.
So first off, thanks guys. Thank you, Rob, to having me. And so I just turned 23 years old. I currently would be an undergrad senior. I was all set to graduate this June, you know, get my diploma, and then perhaps face the reality that so many graduates face today. And where am I going to work? You know, there's, you know, so many recent graduates who are now like working as a waiter or a waitress, you know, for minimum wage. And so I said, I just kind of want to do my own thing. And the first thing that really came to me is I kind of had my aha moment. You know, I think entrepreneurship is all about passion. And so first and foremost, you have to have an idea that you really believe in. And so as a college student myself, my aha moment was I was on Facebook and I was on Twitter and Instagram and all of these other great social networks. But for me as a college student, I took a step back and I said, you know, what do I really want to see? You know, I was on Facebook, and I literally saw pictures of the cookies my grandma had baked that day, which is great, but she can send those to me in the email, or she can text those to me. So for me, the ideal social network for college students did not exist. And so I began sketching literally on a napkin in class, you know, what did I want to see in the ideal social network for college students, really for myself. So I think from day one, I had a tremendous amount of passion really in wanting to solve this problem and really provide college students with the ideal social network. And so like Nathan said, really, it was just me and a napkin sketch. And I took that and to one of my good buddies who is also a senior in college. And to this day, he's our co-founder, our graphic designer. So we had myself and our co-founder. But really nothing else. You know, we had no funding, we had no developers, we had no means to actually turn this napkin sketch into a viable business or actually launch our product. So I went into Nathan's office, and I was probably pretty lost that first meeting. You know, I had the napkin sketch and all of that, but Nathan really began directing me in the right direction. He said, okay, you know, you and Adam, me and my co-founder, just, you know, keep on developing the idea and, you know, just keep on pushing forward with what we could do without any real resources. And so we did that. And so from January until April of 2013, we really were then, okay, we were, you know, continuing to build our business plan, make some mock-ups, you know, within some technical product software, essentially. And then in April, I'm from San Francisco, and so over spring break, I met with an angel investor. I got the meeting from my family. He was essentially a family friend, and I gave him the pitch. And he gave us our first $150,000 in seed funding. So we had that. Me and my co-founder were pretty ecstatic. You can imagine, you know, some 22-year-olds with $150,000 in seed funding. So that very night after he wrote us the check, and you can imagine us college students now with this big check for $150,000, the very first thing we actually did was we went to a bar, and we literally spent $200 just in a couple hours. You know, top shelf stuff. You know, we're college students. Typically, we buy deals, right? So here we were top. So that anyways, now we had $149,800. And we realized, okay, we can't waste any more money. So we got that out of our system. Came back to Eugene after spring break, and we really said, okay, how do we take this $150,000 and get the most utility out of it? How do we make this go the farthest to make the best possible product, the best possible business? And the first step we identified was that we really needed to build our team. And the first step was to bring on two talented software developers that could make our napkin sketch a reality. And so it so happens that, you know, the unemployment rate for talented developers in this city or anywhere, it rounds to literally to 0%. If you're a talented developer, you know, you can get a job anywhere. So we began, you know, literally looking at other companies' team pages around town. You know, and that's just the reality. If you want to find developers, you just need to look at other companies' team pages. And so we did that. And, you know, we got coffee with two developers who were previously employed at another company. You know, and then the question was, you know, why should these professional developers leave their jobs, you know, leave their healthcare, their secure, everything to come work for us, where, you know, our offer to them was a pay cut by 50%, and we told them we can only guarantee your salary for 5 months. So we really had to get them to, you know, really buy into our vision. And there's a lot of stigmas to kind of overcome. You know, in some sense, most social media companies are founded by individuals my age. But on the other hand, you know, why should I, if I need to convince you, you know, to quit your job and come work for me, you might have some stigmas of youth, of perhaps inexperience. And so we were able to overcome those things. In part by kind of having individuals like Nathan really, you know, guide us in areas we don't know. But long story short, to just kind of wrap up our summary, is we built our product over the past summer, essentially our MVP, which is called our minimum viable product. It was the, you know, the least product we could build to initially release. So we built that, and we took that, and in August of last year, we were able to take that working prototype and then build and then raise another $350,000 in seed funding. So, you know, we have quite a bit of runway still to really figure out this problem. Our team has grown to 8 full-time employees. We're actually headquartered right over there in the Broadway Commerce Building, the same building as Sizzle Pie and the Barn Light on the fourth floor. And really, we've, you know, just put our heads down and listened to customers, to listen to users. You know, we've had marketing campaigns. We currently, to this day, we are still in beta at the University of Oregon. Essentially, our product is it's a unique network for the students at each university. So if you go to Oregon, you sign up with your .edu email. That's how we keep out, you know, individuals who are not students who don't have .edu emails. So anyways, it's a closed network for each university with sort of a more modern feature set. I think, again, it kind of relates back to the passion that, you know, as a college student myself, and, you know, I'm building this product for myself and thinking, what do I want in this ideal solution for myself? I realized I didn't just want the basic features that Facebook or Twitter had in that a feed you just simply scroll. I wanted a more map-based, more all about the location. So anyways, I think it just relates back to the passion. And as a result of having, you know, tremendous passion to solve this problem, every single day in office we're motivated, we're driven to, you know, long hours and all of that. So anyways, that's where we're at. We're looking to expand in the coming months to every Pac-12 school. And then this January 2015, we're looking to really launch, you know, hundreds of schools and really go viral across the entire nation. So that's where we are. Thanks.
I think you can take away from Sean's story a couple of things. One, There's an infinite level of creativity amongst students. They find they have problems we don't understand, I don't understand, or they perceive to have problems though I don't understand, that we don't get, and they find really interesting ways to solve those problems. And they can come up with entirely new models for doing business. So if you were to take, you know, the whole of Facebook and then create an individual network for each individual college around the country, that could be a big deal. As Sean has gotten through his research, he's figured out that the retailers around the university and in town are interested in gathering students as their customers. So he's working on some deal, sort of Groupon-like features that allow students to redeem deals through HallSpot, and he might be able to get paid for that service. So really interesting stuff that has happened, and I think it's really exciting to see that technology entrepreneurs and really, you know, wearing the Berkeley shirt today, you know, straight up from the San Francisco Bay Area, there are tons of students who come to the University of Oregon from California who have this innate understanding of what it takes to be an entrepreneur because their parents are, or their friends' parents are, or, you know, they're all involved in startups down in the Bay Area, so they just get how it works. And it's very different than students you will find from other regions. So I like that. We've got lots of students that come to the U of O who just, they understand how it works, and so they just want, that's what they want to do. They don't want to go get a job at a company. They want to create a company to build jobs, and that's really cool. And all of the money that Sean's brought in, has been money from outside. So $500,000 of capital from San Francisco Bay Area came to Eugene and hired some people and pays for their salaries, and that's pretty awesome.
I am a duck at heart.
He's a duck at heart. He is. He is. Like, he's so busy he didn't even think of what sweatshirt he was wearing today, right? So let me introduce Shannon and Karen, and I'll give the backstory here. I love this backstory. So Shannon and Karen, I started my job in September of 2012, and the first thing I did as program manager of the Entrepreneurship Center was take a trip to Asia with all of the MBA students. And so I ended up in Shanghai, China, with a bunch of people I'd never met before, and I was supposed to be in charge as a faculty person. Shannon had flown in from Vietnam, I think it was, and Karen also, you were there with the group, but hadn't met either of them, and got to know them throughout the trip, which is, it's a wonderful program. We'd love to tell you about it more some other time, but we take students to Asia and introduce them to the world that is China. It's very interesting. But when we got back from this trip after 2 weeks in China, I was teaching a class called New Venture Planning. And one of the parts of the process of that class is you have to identify an idea that you're going to pursue as your business idea in my class. And Shannon had two ideas, this team of people they had come up with. One was a candle recycling business, right? That was kind of the other front runner?
More or less
candle wax recycling. Which I thought was very interesting, very nice, you know, good. I guess we don't want too many candles thrown away, but it didn't really pop for me. It wasn't like, oh, that's a really great idea. And the second idea that Shannon mentioned that her team was thinking about was to start a ketchup company. Also not particularly awe-inspiring, but as I thought about it, I was like, okay, well, you could really do some interesting things there. And as soon as we started talking about, oh, well, it's kind of like, you know, ketchup's kind of like mustard was 10 years ago. You know, it's plain and boring, but why not fancy ketchup? So I was like, okay, give that a shot, guys. So they immediately became Team Sauce, was their first name of their business idea. And we started pushing them through the process of my class in the fall. And then they got to the end of the fall, and we have a business plan competition at the business school, and they won it because they had this really good pitch. They had this really strong idea. They'd been doing taste tests in class, which was awesome. We got French fries and ketchup in class. You could tell that this was a team that together was really excited about what they were doing. And I think that's one of the most important parts of entrepreneurship is you've got a bunch of people that you want to work with that are excited to do things every day because you're going to work for no money. You're going to stay up late. You're going to do crazy stuff because you have to. And you need to like those people that you're in business with. And these four students obviously really liked each other. And when we got to January, into the winter term, we said, okay, well, do you really want to do this? What do you want to build? And our question to the team was, do you want to build a lifestyle business, which is a, oh, it's interesting, we sell it in Eugene and Corvallis and maybe Portland, but it's small and we keep it small and, you know, we're, it's fun and profitable. Or do you want to really build a company that can be a national brand? Do you really want to make a big play for something? And to their credit, the team said, no, we think we want to be big. We want to build a brand. We want to build a company. We want to make a big run at this. So they made that commitment, and they are doing it. And I'll let them tell the details of the story, but it's been a fantastic journey to watch as these four students, two of them here and the two others who are equally wonderful students and people, decided they were starting a ketchup company. And that's not as easy as it might seem. Supply chain issues with organic tomato paste and, you know, where do you find 55-gallon drums of vinegar and stuff like that. So they've got a great story, and I'm just really proud of them as a, you know, example of what we can turn out here if we put the right people in the right direction. So I'll let you guys tell more about your story.
We are sometimes collectively known as Sharon. So I'm Shannon, and this is Karen. And we kind of just bounce off of each other as we talk, so I think it's probably easier if we just sit here and tell you a little bit about our story. I was thinking maybe we could start off just telling you a little bit about who we are and then fill in the gaps in Nathan's story and tell you some of our kind of fun anecdotes and how we went from team sauce to Red Duck ketchup and all of that. Yeah. So I'm Shannon. I'm from Northern California. I grew up in Davis. I did my undergrad at UC San Diego. I was a bio and psych major. I was on the men's crew team there. Thought I wanted to go into like nutrition or fitness. And then decided maybe I wanted to focus more on like environmental science and ended up coming up this way to focus on sustainability. And just kind of landed in Eugene because I had a couple friends here that said, oh, you'll love it up here. It's not quite like San Diego. San Diego's great to visit, don't get me wrong, especially this time of year, but it wasn't my place to live. So they encouraged me to come up here. U of O was one of the schools I was looking at, so I thought maybe it would work out that I'll live in the town where I'm applying to school. And it worked. I interviewed, I did the campus tour, I fell in love with the program. I was focused on sustainability, but I had a really strong interest in entrepreneurship and the fact that I could kind of do both and look at, you know, sustainable supply chains while potentially starting a business was really appealing to me. So that's a little bit about me and how I ended up here. I'll let Karen tell you a little bit about herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Karen. Of Red Duck Food's four team members, I think I'm the only native Oregonian, but I actually grew up right here in Eugene. My mom works at the U of O. My dad recently retired from the state of Oregon, so I'm pretty much an Oregonian through and through, but I did go to Pomona College down in Southern California to do my undergrad. So I spent four nice years in the sunshine down there. And then actually worked for about a year at a large accounting firm down in LA when I kind of realized that, you know, just working at a really large company and working in accounting wasn't really what I wanted to do with my life long term, especially after coming out of a really great liberal arts program. I just really craved something more dynamic that I had kind of more direction in driving towards my own goals and just learning about a broad array of subjects instead of really specializing in just accounting. But unfortunately, when you're working at a job in accounting, that pretty much only sets you up to be a good candidate for other jobs in accounting. So I kind of thought about my options and realized that I had a lot of contacts still up here in Eugene. I knew people who had gone through the business school here who highly recommended it. And so I ended up applying and then coming to pursue my MBA at U of O, which in hindsight was probably the best decision I ever made to come back to Oregon because it allowed me to meet all the people here at U of O where we actually started forming our company. So as Nathan mentioned, it was the second year of the two-year MBA program where we started Red Duck Foods. And I think he alluded to this, but really the most important part, I think, about the story of how we started out was, I guess, the day we decided that the four of us wanted to work together. Because the people you work with, I feel like the team is the most important part of the job. You know, who you're spending your time with and making decisions with and, you know, debating with and arguing with and having fun with. At the end of the day, like, when you're part of a really small company, that's the most important piece. So the four of us, it was actually on that class trip, the U of O, the business school's Engaging Asia trip for the MBA students where we were in China, that the four of us actually got to know each other a lot better. And we realized we had a lot of similar interests in terms of, you know, we were all about to take this new venture planning course, but instead of kind of having the attitude like, oh, this is gonna be a fun project to work on, the four of us were all really excited about taking the course from a perspective of, you know, we are truly interested in entrepreneurship to the point where whatever we start, we would all be open-minded about actually trying to make that into a real company, or we would all like to work for startups, you know, at some point in the future. So we all knew that we were serious about this type of project, and we all just really got along. I think another really important thing was we all have a shared love of food. So imagine us, you know, going through China, trying different foods at the different markets. It was a huge source of inspiration for us. And kind of to explain a little more about how we came up with the idea for ketchup, it sounds like it just came out of left field probably, but there is kind of a reason for it. And one of the reasons was because during the trip to Asia, a couple of us sampled some cherry Coke flavored ketchup at a wine bar in Hong Kong. And then traveling in Europe, I had an amazing curry ketchup in Germany, and it's quite popular in a lot of Western Europe. So fast forward to the fall, this is a year and a half ago, in October, we're sitting down, we're at a campus bar, and we're like, all right, we're about to start this huge project, we want to take it seriously, we have to write the business plan for a company we might be interested in starting. But what are we going to do? And we're sitting there, there's some Cajun tots on the table, there's a bottle of Heinz ketchup, and we're like, something just isn't right here. You know, there's good food, and then there's this bottle of like high fructose corn syrup sitting next to it. And yes, there are some organic ketchups out there, there are some ketchups with quality ingredients, but we just felt like there was no excitement in ketchup, and we had this great ketchup elsewhere. So why not make it ourselves? And it sounded crazy to us at the time too. And so we kind of put it on our list of ideas, and we just kept coming back to it as something that we could really have a lot of fun with while actually carrying it out. So that's just a little bit about how we got started.
Yeah, to Karen's point, I mean, when you think about the grocery store these days, if you go into the condiments aisle, the mustard part is like this wide, ketchup's like this. And we, you know, we wanted something that really embodied those flavors we had. When we had those flavors in other countries, it was like this inspiring, exciting new twist on an old favorite, like something you're familiar with, but all of a sudden it has so much flavor and it's fun again. And we really wanted to bring that back and, you know, put ketchup on everything again. It's okay to put ketchup on your green beans. You know, when you're a kid, your parents were totally fine with you doing that. Well, we're grown-ups and we put ketchup on our green beans and our cheese pizza and our tater tots and everything else. But, you know, we love food so much that we enjoy experimenting with it, and we wanted to make sure that, you know, kind of promote that attitude to other people as well. But as Karen was saying, we kept coming back to this idea, and it was about that time that we were on a class trip when Nathan and I were talking about candle wax and ketchup. And arguably, neither seem all that exciting. You know, a lot of the projects in this class are like medical life-saving devices and things that are really, you know, interesting and have the potential to make a huge difference in the world. And we're like, we want to make ketchup. But, you know, It's a blessing and it's a curse. Having something that's not a complex technology also means you can prototype it really quickly. So we went into the kitchen and pretty pretty quickly we were able to just play with flavors. I mean, we Googled a recipe for ketchup just to get us started. We were like, what goes in ketchup? I think there's tomatoes of some sort and vinegar, right? So we kind of destroyed Karen's kitchen, but we did probably 20 or 30 different iterations. We used apple cider vinegar, we used white vinegar, we used brown sugar, we used molasses, we used agave, we used white sugar. You know, we just kind of played around with amounts of salt, different flavors, and we got really creative. We had so much fun with it. It kind of splatters. If you ever try to make ketchup at home, I highly recommend like a splatter screen or something, because it will get all over the place. Looks like a crime scene on the wall. There's just red everywhere. But we created these flavors, we tested them out, and the ones that we came up with were the three that, hands down across the board, all four of us just loved, and we tested them out to other people, and they were like, oh, those are awesome. And so if you ever get a chance to try the curry ketchup, that's directly inspired by the curry ketchup that Karen had in Belgium. And then we also have a classic, which, for those of you that aren't here, it's a 12-ounce jar. It's a little bit smoky and sweet. They're at all the stores here in town, Market of Choice and Capella, Sundance, Kiva, all the natural product stores, so if you ever want to go check it out. And then we also have a spicy flavor, which has a little kick to it. It's not quite as spicy as a hot sauce, but we developed our own spice blend there. Jess and Kurt went into the kitchen one day and just kind of threw a bunch of stuff together, and we call it our Latino Charmer spice blend, and it is awesome. It just... we love it. So we've had a lot of fun, and we've been able to, you know, contrary to Sean's startup, you know, his is very much technology-based, and he's got to have developers and everything. We're in the kitchen getting covered in tomato sauce. So there's a lot of similarities, a lot of differences that are, it's always fun to talk to other startups and kind of see what their challenges are and how we're similar and how we're different and can kind of relate to things. But yeah, so we started this company. We had a shelf-ready product by May, at which time we realized, you know, after kind of being prodded, is this a real company or is this just kind of a hobby? And we're like, okay, we need to start scaling this up. We need to have a co-packer, a contract packer, help us produce it. And we need money for that, which was, you know, more than the $50 that we kind of collectively went and got stuff from the grocery store. We were going to do thousands of jars. You know, you have to buy all of those ingredients up front, and you have to pay for that up front, even before you sell any of the product. So we decided to launch a Kickstarter campaign, which is a crowdfunding campaign online. So we posted a video, it told our story, and we asked for donations, basically. And so people make pledges, and in return, they get different levels of rewards. Most of them had some combination of the ketchups in them. Some had the t-shirts. But we did a Kickstarter campaign, and we raised over $25,000 that way. So that was how we kind of got our first chunk of financing, more or less, you know, to get us up and off the ground and turn it into a real business. And from there, I mean, I'd say that was kind of a game changer for us. That's where we really became a legit company and had a product in more than just two cases that we were making in the kitchen at midnight.
I think if I can ask a couple of questions, yeah, of you guys, I think the common elements of the story are passion and a team. And Sean's co-founder, Adam's not here, but they're a great team, right? It's two people that have this passion and idea to change something. And Red Duck has that, HallSpot has that. If you guys could talk just a little bit about sort of when you felt like it was real and you were really, you know, this was really happening. Was that the funding event? Was that when you made some other sort of, you know, commitment? What was it, Sean, for you?
For me, I guess first off, let me just jump back to a comment that Shannon made, in that it's two different startups. For they're a ketchup company, which they can prototype, you know, in a matter of hours. I'm sure that first day in the kitchen, right, making the 20 different batches, and you know, they could potentially have a viable product within a week, potentially, as opposed to a technology company. You know, our initial prototype was 2 months, and then our initial prototype we thought we could release was 4 months. So it just shows every startup has a completely different, you know, path. But kind of Nathan's question, for us, it was when we first got our first $150,000 check. You know, at that point, me and my co-founder were still both college students. You know, we were planning to, you know, focus on classes for spring term of 2013. But as soon as we got that check, I think we both collectively failed all eight of our aggregated classes of that term. It was eight Fs. and that was the moment that the focus changed from learning to doing. And like I said before, the moment we got that check, that was when it became very real. And we realized that, hey, you know, we're not going to be judged against our peers anymore, you know, in reports and homework. We're going to be judged against, you know, professionals in the Silicon Valley, in the tech industry, who have done this time and time again and are world-class in their industry. So we realized that was the big leap moment, and we had to step up.
I think in our case for Red Duck Foods, we've had a number of different events that have kind of illuminated different levels, perhaps, of making the business a reality. I think probably the first one was a year ago. It was January 2013, and that was when we actually decided to form a company and, you know, register with the Secretary of State and kind of do all of the background things necessary to have a food company and start distributing a product. So I remember, like, I was looking back at some pictures the other day, and we've very meticulously documented a lot of our major events. So I see like a picture of like a letter that we like with a stamp on it that's like addressed to the Secretary of State. I'm like, okay, we clearly thought that was a big deal. And at the time, that was the biggest deal ever. We were starting a company, we were making it official. But then, you know, with each passing month, there's kind of a new milestone we hit where we're like, wow, like, now we're a real company, or we're even more real. And so, you know, forming the company, I think Shannon mentioned our Kickstarter campaign. That was a huge deal for us. That allowed us to kind of take the next step. And then in May 2013, that was when we actually had our product ready, and we sold to our first account, which was the Duck Store at the U of O. They were the first ones to actually carry our product on the shelf, and shortly after that, we got into our first grocery store, which was Sundance Natural Foods. So those were huge milestones. And then very recently, we just moved into our first warehouse. So That was another major event for us, where we're looking around at a 800 square feet of space, and we're just like imagining ketchup stacking up to the ceiling and imagining trucks unloading and loading ketchup for us so we can start distributing beyond Oregon, which is where we are right now. So those are, I don't know, it's really fun to see how the business evolved and how, you know, with each passing month, there are new things we accomplished that we, you know, really convince us more and more that this is going down the right path.
I totally agree. I have one more to add, though. Just the funding piece. This was pretty big for HallSpot. It was also, ours came in different size chunks than theirs, but it was really a moment of like, wow, other people believe in this as much as we do. And that's one of those moments where you're like, this is real. We have money to actually execute and start and build this business, but we also have, you know, this kind of increased responsibility to other people also. And so that was, I would just add that onto those list of moments that we keep having in terms of like, wow, we're really real now. And we didn't actually have a chance to go out to the bars. We had a box of flavored alcohol from another food startup that we competed against in Austin in our office. It had been there for about 2 months. So we busted into that box in plastic cups. That was our celebration. A little bit different, but
I think you still had the full 25,000.
Yeah. So there's a common thread here. When you get funding, you need to celebrate. So that's a pretty big milestone for, I think, most startups.
That's a good point. Like, you know, building a business is such a challenge. You know, there's so many essentially puzzle pieces you have to put in the correct order for, you know, the business to really be successful. And at times you really just have to step back and you know, when there's major milestones accomplished, you need to say, okay, hey, we did this. You know, we're not there yet, but let's take a day or a night and just step back and celebrate. Because really that's what it's all about. You know, there's the company and then there's us as individuals. You know, cool. You have to kind of maintain that human element.
Cool. So are there, do we take questions from the audience? Are there some?
We do. Let's take a brief break for you to compose your own questions as the table, and then we'll move to questions.
You are tuned to KLCC Eugene, 89.7, 90.5 KLCO Newport, KLFR Reedsport, 89.1, and at 88.1, KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, and on the web at klcc.org.
Okay, welcome back to our City Club program on how young ducks grow their own business. Our guests today are Karen Bonner, Shannon Oliver, Sean Thorne, and Nathan Lilligard. And now to your questions.
You'll have to forgive me, but I can't resist this one. But I've got to make a couple of allusions. I think your company needs a good Power 10. But Mike, you ought to check with some people in Minnesota who have what they call the Ketchup Advisory Council.
Okay. There is such a thing, the Ketchup Advisory Council?
We will put it on our list of things to explore.
Those of us who listen to the Prairie Home Companion got that. Thanks. You've really stimulated the audience. We appreciate your comments very much. And our table is curious about what you lived on during the development stage and how you determined compensation at the point where you felt you could be compensated.
Ooh, that's a really good question, because that's the main question students ask when they're like, oh, I want to start a company. Do I get to pay myself? So, Sean, maybe?
For me, it's not about personal compensation. It's about how do we make our investment go the farthest and have the most utility. So for me, I say, what is the most minimum, what's the least amount of money I could live on monthly? And so I identify that, okay, I need my rent paid, and I need like $500 for food and a little bit of fun. So I only take $1,000 monthly, because that saves, you know, the company the most money to then have more utility.
Shannon and Karen, I know you guys had that was a process.
So this is Shannon. We scrabbled together some things to make ends meet over the summer. We all worked various jobs to kind of help pay our bills, and I think a few of us had forward-looking while school was still in. We had maybe stashed a couple extra $100 from our student loan checks, knowing that it was going to be very useful in the summertime before we could pay ourselves. So we did what we had to make ends meet. But that being said, we also found that that was time spent working other jobs for other people that we weren't spending on our business. So as soon as we had some funding in order to kind of be able, like Sean said, be able to cover our very basic necessities, we kind of did a very similar analysis of what's the minimum that we need to allow us to devote full-time 100% of our energy to Red Duck, and does that jive with what the company needs financing-wise?
Yeah, and I'll just say I always recommend to students and anyone starting a company is you should pay yourself what you need to live without too much stress about your personal finances, because it's distracting to your business if you're worried about paying your own rent. So pay yourself what you need to you know, make the ends meet, but focus on your business. So, yeah. Nice question. Thank you.
Karen Seidel, City Club member. For the ketchup ladies, what kind of state or federal bureaucracy did you have to go through to get approval for a food product?
This is Karen with Red Duck, and we found, as people who had never started a food product company before, that there is indeed some layers and hoops you have to jump through in order to get there. We are an organic product, and actually right now we are working with Oregon Tilth to get our organic certification. We're actually in the process of that right now, and so, you know, ensuring that all of our supply chain is certified organic, and, you know, filling out a lot of paperwork, kind of explaining the audit trail of how we make our products, those are all steps we had to take. And with larger food companies, there are entire divisions or people whose entire job it is to manage the certification process. And we're doing it. We're juggling that with 50 other things, trying to get into new stores, making deliveries, moving our office, planning, setting sales goals. And so to have that piece, the certification piece added onto it, it's a pretty difficult thing for a really small food company to take on. In addition, just understanding the nature of our product, like and making sure we're in compliance with all of the other state and federal agencies has been something that has taken a significant amount of time, especially when we were first setting up and just researching what it needed to take.
Yeah, there is no roadmap for how do you start a food company.
Not yet. Maybe there will be one day, though.
Our table was interested in how you manage distribution. I can imagine that you went to Sundance and talked to the people, but what about the people in Bend and Chicago? Is there an agency that you work with? We had no idea how would you go about that.
That is an excellent question. This is Shannon again. Distribution is one of the biggest things. You know, Karen mentioned 50 other things that we're working on every day. Distribution is a huge one because right now we are currently putting the cases of ketchup in our cars and driving them around, which works really well when I need to make a delivery to Marche Provisions, but it doesn't work so well when I need to get down to Medford or Ashland, or we've got to send someone out to Bend. Portland seems a little bit closer, but it still tends to take up all day. So as we move forward, we will be enlisting the help of a distributor. We'll probably start with a local distributor that is very regional with Oregon, ideally some parts of Northern California and some parts of Washington. And the hope would be that they can help both access accounts that we couldn't access otherwise and take on the deliveries. It turns out that a case of ketchup is actually pretty heavy, and the Postal Service doesn't like to just send it for you, at least not without charging you a lot for it. So distribution is a huge part of any food company, and we're going to start with Oregon and then expand to the West Coast, and then ultimately we'll take on additional distributors that can get us, you know, out to Chicago and wherever Red Duck needs to be.
Betty Hosokawa, we were thinking you really missed the boat by not having samples on our tables. But we would like to know if you are planning, as some products do, to have any sample demonstrations at any of the grocery stores in the future.
This is Karen. That is a great idea. We actually do probably two or three in-store grocery demos every week. And our website, redduckfoods.com, has an events section that we post about upcoming marketing events we're participating in. We'll actually be at the Cartathlon next weekend, next Sunday on March 2nd in Portland, which is like a scavenger hunt food cart event. But we're around town all the time doing events at, Capella, Kiva, Sundance, the Market of Choice locations, just doing in-store demos. So we always post that on our social media when we're going to be in a store demoing, and we'll also post that on our website, too.
Hi, I'm Paul Thompson. I'm a City Club member for a while. You've told us about the euphoria of starting your companies, but you must have an exit strategy so that you can achieve that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for yourself and your investors. Can you tell us what that exit strategy is and what role does it play in your day-to-day operations of your company?
That's a good question. I think it's definitely, this question particularly is very dependent on the industry, so we'll have different answers, I suspect. For us, you know, in technology, it's a very high-stakes industry. It's either, you know, HallSpot is either going to be worth, you know, quite a lot of money or it's going to be worth nothing. And kind of along our timeline as we continue to create a product that has more value and more users and more revenue coming in, there's various potential exits for us. Companies like Facebook and Google and Yahoo, they're constantly buying promising growth technology companies. The ultimate potential prize would be an IPO for us. Like for instance, Twitter just IPO'd. Given there are only 11 IPOs annually among technology companies, so more realistically, our exit is being acquired by some company.
So this is Shannon again. I'd say, although it's a little bit different, it's also very similar. There are a number of potential exits for us, and really, I mean, whether it's acquisition or keeping the company ourselves or taking it public, whatever you may, you know, what the options may be, for us, on a day-to-day basis, all of those are not really even options until we build the brand, have really good distribution, expand our product line. So for us, you know, we have these ideas of what the exit could be, but we're having so much fun doing what we're doing right now, and the eye on the prize is more just, you know, building this company and making it what it can be, so that we can explore those options later.
Yeah, you really just have to kind of be opportunists, like, I agree with you guys that that's really not even on our horizon. You know, if an opportunity presents itself, we'll evaluate as it comes, really.
Yeah. Good question, though.
Hi, I'm Marilyn Milne. We at our table were wondering about when you plan and project to achieve profitability. You may have covered that already with your exit strategy. And another question I'm curious about is what kind of infrastructure have you needed in our area? I think I'd read Red Duck, you use Sweet Creek Foods to do large batches of your ketchup now and or package it. So what infrastructure have both of your businesses need? They are so different, and yet there must be something that you need in this area that you've been able to find. So kind of two questions.
Well, for Red Duck, as you mentioned, the co-packer was a huge need for us. We've found it. But we were making the jars ourselves in a commercial kitchen. So that was the first step for us, was to find a kitchen that was certified that we could rent and make it ourselves in these huge 15-gallon pots with like a foot and a half long spoon that we were stirring. We looked like, you know, it was like a cauldron of ketchup. That we maxed out our capacity on that pretty quickly. It took us about 8 hours to make, I don't know, 15 cases. And when Sundance ordered three of each flavor, you know, half of our inventory is out the door, and we couldn't approach any new stores. So that's where we realized we need a co-packer. Sweet Creek is great. They're local. They have a huge priority on helping smaller businesses grow. So that was a huge help for us. It was like kids on Christmas when we saw their machines, their automated machines, just automatically putting 12 ounces into every single jar. You know, before we had a funnel and we were kind of eyeballing it and does it look full? And so machinery for us, having machinery that can do things that we would otherwise be doing by hand is very helpful. And we're learning the lesson of figuring out which things is it really worth it for us to be doing and which things does it make sense to hire help on.
Also, this is Karen. I'd like to add, in terms of infrastructure, there's a tremendous amount of support for small food companies and sustainable food companies in Lane County. And so I think we've really benefited from just people here are really passionate about, you know, supporting local, eating healthy, and just kind of supporting the type of business that we've started. So I think that has also been kind of illustrated with the existence of some other kind of local programs like the Sprout Regional Food Hub in Springfield is where, when we first got in office, that was where we were. They also have a commercial kitchen you can rent by the hour, so we would rent their kitchen to do spice mixing and research and development. And, you know, not every community has resources like that. I think we're really lucky to have kind of a strong interest in food, and so we've been able to benefit from that. And then also the university. I mean, yes, we started at the university, but we graduated in June, and since then we've kept really close ties with Nathan, with other people at the university. We go in there on a regular basis and keep in contact with all the people who helped us start out, because they're still a fundamental and really important part of our business. They suggest other people we should meet with. You know, they might have contacts up in Portland or know someone who works here. And even the Duck Store, we're going to be there actually next Thursday in an event called Proudly Oregon. We like to do demos at the Duck Store and you know, show our product to the students. Incoming students are always really excited about, you know, hearing our story, because it's kind of an illustration of the type of thing that they might be able to pursue if they're interested in entrepreneurship or food or any of that. So there's really a lot of resources that have kind of cultivated this really nice environment for us to start this type of business here in Eugene.
For us, Sean of Hallspot, for us, obviously, we don't have quite the logistical needs of distributing ketchup. You know, all we need to do is have students physically download our product on their iPhone. So for us, though, locally, what do we need as a technology company? Really, we need talented developers to sit in our office all day long and code. We don't need anything else. And so really, how do we obtain that locally? Really, just tapping into the network, you know, meeting people. You know, it's not about what you know, it's about who you know. And so just by tapping into resources such as, you know, Nathan and other just networking events we've been able able to reach out and really meet the people necessary we need. Your first question in terms of revenue, that's kind of a joke in the social media industry. There's no such thing as revenue in the social media industry. We're focused on acquiring users, which then, once we have millions of users on our platform, then there's potential to monetize those users.
Yeah. Hi, Craig Smith, City Club member. My question has to do with whether the program provides detail of a startup. For example, advice regarding entity selection, compliance with employment laws, personal guarantees, that sort of detail of infrastructure.
Yeah, I can address this. This is Nathan. We do get into that sort of detail when we get to the point that someone's really serious about, you know, making this go. So in the fall, in my class, we sort of touch on those details as it gets to become more real. Myself as a mentor and instructor and many of the other mentors involved with the program will help people through that process. So I send a lot of people down the, you know, do you want to be a C Corp? Do you want to be an LLC? Do you, you know, make sure you get your tax identification number and all that.
And pay your taxes on
time. And pay your taxes on time and payroll taxes. That's always a fun one when you realize that your payroll calculation is two times what you think it is. But all that fun stuff, we do get into the details of that as people move further down the process, right? So it's really important to make sure you get that stuff right.
I'll also say that really all that information is out there. If you can Google anything, there's legitimate websites that will provide legitimate advice. Yeah. But a funny story was that when we got our 150,000 and we had now four full-time employees, the first time I had to do payroll, I accidentally left all of our money in our savings, and I distributed checks from our checking. So the very first time I did payroll, all the checks bounced.
Which is why we got an accountant.
Severe penalties for that.
Yeah, which is why we got an accountant for Sean. That's why you hire an accountant, Sean.
Brian Carlton, member. I have a nephew who started up a company making a olive oil margarine called Olivio. He had no problem getting capital since his father-in-law is Lee Iacocca. But anyway, but the question I have is that he had trouble having to buy space on supermarket shelves. And I thought, could you address that? Have you been gifted this space, or do you have to pay for it?
That's a very good question, and that's something that we've been asked from time to time. In larger supermarkets like Safeway and Kroger and very conventional markets, it is very common that you pay what's called a slotting fee. So you pay for that shelf space. As Karen alluded to earlier, this is an amazing community to start a food company, basically all of Oregon, but especially Eugene. And we've been really fortunate so far in that when we go into the stores, you know, we're targeting more of the market of choices, the new seasons, the Whole Foods, stores that promote local products and stores that take pride in carrying locally made products. So they typically either don't charge those fees or they waive them for local products like ours, which has been really, really great. And it's basically been a huge help in getting us off the ground and being able to basically sell the product.
Yeah, you couldn't. I think one of the things that's amazing about this community is you see Market of Choice and others that, you know, you see hundreds probably of local startup products on the shelf there, and you sort of go through this progression of you get to your local markets and then you can go national. Well, I don't know of too many other communities that have a robust local foods marketplace where you can build a business, and that I think is an amazing asset here in Eugene that I'm sure we all recognize, but it's been really beneficial for Red Duck. And you know, think of the dozen other companies whose products you buy all the time, and they're local foods companies. So yeah, one's question.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. Years ago, I bought into a business that had been run by a partnership. And at that time, I heard many stories about the dangers of partnerships. And I look at your team of four people, and this is kind of a follow-up on the exit strategy. When things go, what is the preparations or the things that you think about in terms of the group not working together? Mm-hmm. Or in other patterns, partnerships that are interpreters?
Well, I can maybe take that as Nathan. I recommend to every entrepreneur that you never, ever do 50-50.
right? Because if you're 50-50, then who wins if you have a disagreement? That's always tough. And also set things up properly with legal documentation. So as soon as it gets to real serious stuff, I send everybody to an attorney so that they can actually get it done right.
And that's what we've done. You know, we have all the shares and say, okay, you have X percent, I have Y percent, he has T percent. You know, it's all clear.
And we did something very similar. Being in Nathan's class, we're told time and time again, you know, you have four people, that's an even number, what are you going to do about that? But as we mentioned earlier, we've never had to enact any sort of, you know, tie-breaking vote or anything like that, because we very strategically from the get-go chose our partners based on our work ethics, the way that we work together, our values, and we are able to pretty much every single time talk things out and get to a consensus. So we haven't really had any problems with that. We might be unique though, so.
Well, thank you to Karen Bonner, Shannon Oliver, Sean Thorne, and Nathan Lilligard for bringing clarity and vision to the City Club program on how young ducks grow their own businesses. Let's show them our support. And thanks again to our sponsors, Evans, Elder & Brown, Gatos, Churnside, and Balthrop, at PacInfo, and to our newest sponsor, Eugene Legal, owned by our very own James Baldock. We meet next Friday on February 28th here at the Downtown Athletic Club to hear Susan Band discuss shelter care in the WIT, renovating buildings and reviving lives. Lunches for this program can be ordered at the City Club's website or by contacting the office. Thank you for coming today.